it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the CHGO Cubs podcast. My name is Corey. I am joined, as always, by Brendan. We are coming to you on Sunday, April 28th, mere minutes after the Cubs drop the finale 5-4 on Sunday Night Baseball to the Red Sox. Two in a row to the Red Sox, so the Cubs drop that series. This is your Sunday edition of the CHGO Cubs podcast, so we will talk about the entire week that was in Chicago Cubs baseball. That included a sweep of the Houston Astros to finish off the homestand at Wrigley Field, and then, of course, dropping this series in Boston to begin this road trip and this stretch of games with no off day. Brendan, we have more injury updates to discuss. We have guys that are hot, guys that are not hot. Yes. Plenty to discuss, but I'm sure, especially it being Sunday night, especially it being a game where you had the big moment from Mike Tauchman and then they lose anyway, I'm sure you're not feeling thrilled to be chatting with me right now.
Well, you could probably sense my annoyance before we went live here backstage. It's one of those losses. It's okay. Yeah. I'm a little bit more frustrated because it's going to be Monday morning in about, 10 hours. And one of those Sunday night classical frustrating games just happened. But take a step back. Cubs are still 17-11, surviving with half the team injured. There could be worse places to be. That's the mindset I'm going with.
No, and you're right about that. I think it's okay to be frustrated. Obviously, the game on Saturday was one for Joe Maddon's good old-fashioned trash bin. Throw it in that one and move on. And a frustrating one-run loss on Sunday Night Baseball, and had your chances in the game on Sunday. Really wanted to pay off that Mike Tauchman moment, Daniel Palencia giving the team and the offense a chance there in the late going. But it is what it is. But like you said, Brendan, 17-11, they're a half game out of first place. Had they won the game tonight, they would have been in sole possession of first place in the NL Central. So with everything that is gone on with this team, and we'll start with some of the injury stuff and setting the table there, that they're still in a really good spot. They're going to have a lot to continue to weather, but hopefully some reinforcements back soon. We do have a super chat early on here. If you're listening on our live YouTube chat, hop in the comments, hit that like button, let us know what you're thinking as the broadcast goes on. You're listening on your podcast feeds on Monday morning, later Sunday night. Hello. Welcome into the show. We're happy to have you here. We do have a super chat from Steven Kason. Steven says, I'm ready to be heard again tomorrow. Go Cubs, go, I guess. Same. I'm right there with you, Steven.
Right.
Appreciate that. I like it. Yeah. That's the grind of the baseball season, especially when we're not even May yet. So one of the first few things I wanted to start with, Brendan, was some of the updates. So a lot going on with the roster. Obviously, I just mentioned Daniel Palencia pitching in this game tonight. He came back. Luke Little goes down. Jordan Wicks hits the injured list with a forearm issue. It sounds like not something super major. Sometimes the forearm is a precursor to bad stuff. But we saw Justin Steele deal with this in the past. And just reading some of the stuff from the beat writers, Wicks sounded optimistic that this was just something he wasn't feeling great, didn't recover right after his last start. And early in the season, Council said they want to be particularly careful with this. Justin Steele threw on Friday in Arizona. By all reports, that went very well. I don't think we have the official report on what is next for him, but the plan is that if he's feeling good, he will head out on his rehab stint, probably with Iowa or wherever is convenient. So that's good news. The Wicks thing is bad news. Bullpen shuffling and stuff like that. A lot going on with this roster. And as you said, 17-11, playing pretty good baseball. You just swept the Astros earlier this week. This series with the Red Sox was right there to be won. They're dealing with a lot, Brendan. It's a lot. It's sort of a miracle that they're where they are.
If you were to have told me going into the year, you'd be without your three-hitter, your four-hitter, you would have reversion, maybe an injury from Hendricks. Steele would miss the first month. Jordan Wicks would go down. You would have bullpen problems. Julian Merriweather would be out for presumably the season or the majority of that. Alzolay would be removed from the closer role. I can go on and on and on. Yet, despite that, 17-11, surviving a very difficult initiating West Coast trip to start the year. Again, I'm trying to be optimistic. You zoom out a little bit, you see who's performing well. Mike Tauchman, Nico Hoerner, Ian Happ, still dealing with the hamstring injury, but performing well, being patient. The bullpen, Daniel Palencia did look good in that Sunday outing tonight. There's still a lot of positives. And you survive this stretch here in the next 2 weeks and hopefully get healthy and get these guys like Steele back and Saya back and Bellinger back. This almost seems like, in a weird way, almost a best case relative scenario.
Sure. Yeah, I think it would have to be. We do have another super chat from our guy, Kyle, the setup man, who does great work over on his YouTube channel. If you want to check that out, Kyle says, appreciate the commitment on Sunday nights this year, boys. Go Cubs, go. It's off tough. To New York. Yes.
I'm not going
off
to New York
to play the Mets.
They can go.
Appreciate that, Kyle. And like I said, do check out his stuff, the setup man on YouTube. Lots to talk about. I do want to talk about Mike Tauchman. We had planned to talk about Mike Tauchman before he hit a game-tying three-run home run in this game because he has just been so good for this team, not only this year, but dating back, obviously, as you guys know, to last year, the summer of Mike Tauchman. We were debating in the CHGO Cubs sort of work Slack channel, like, is this the second summer of Mike Tauchman, the era it's of the, Mike Tauchman? Sequel. The season of Mike Tauchman, whatever you want to call it, but he has been a very, very great piece for this Cubs team. So want to talk about that. Want to talk about PCA having a nice week at the plate. Yeah. That was very good to see. Some good plays in the field, as you saw on Sunday night, that kind of lightning speed coming through. We want to talk about Shota and Javier Assad kind of leading at the top of that rotation. And we'll probably talk about some of the depth and bullpen stuff. Because as you saw, I think I saw a comment earlier in our YouTube chat. Yeah, this is what, five games that you've blown, either a blown save or, you know, a blown tie game in the ninth or something like that. So it's tough. Yeah. And the bullpen is going to continue to be something that they have to piece together and sort out. Let's start with Mike Tauchman. We got another super chat. You guys are being very generous tonight. We appreciate that. Rogue Wave Creative says, thanks for all you do. Good game tonight for what they have right now. It's going better than expected. Go Cubs. And it is now the summers of Mike Tauchman. Appreciate that, Rogue Wave Creative, very much. Thank you guys for all the support. We do appreciate that. Let's start with Mike Tauchman. So I had written down his numbers as a Chicago Cub in 481 plate appearances that, as I was looking at Fangraphs, did not include tonight. So he does hit a three-run homer tonight. So these numbers are only better for the Chicago Cubs. But in his time since last year, 2023, with the Cubs to now, again, not including tonight, 481 plate appearances, a 762 OPS, 341 WOBA, 115 WRC+. For a guy that they invited in and at first didn't break with the team, didn't know what kind of role he would have and how he might contribute and fit in, that is incredible value, Brendan, for now going on, you know, over a year of him producing across multiple seasons. And it felt this way last year for sure. And then you look at it again this year and you ask yourself, like, where would they be without Mike Tauchman and the depth that he has provided to this team when guys have gotten hurt, when David Ross needed a leadoff hitter last year to guide them through that stretch that had them as buyers at the deadline. Now when Belly's hurt again and Craig Counsell needs someone to sort of stabilize things when Ian Happ or Seiya Suzuki has been out. What just a tremendous signing and production that Mike Tauchman has provided for this now year plus.
We've seen in past the Cubs try to fill that depth void with free agents unsuccessfully. Having someone like Tauchman come in.
You want to run through any of the names?
No, I do not. Don't even think about bringing up those names, Corey. If you look at the overall bulk value even this year, it's remarkable what he's doing. This is not just a fourth outfielder type production in his playing time and his role. 164 WRC plus, a chase rate in the 95th percentile. He's walking more essentially than striking out at an 18% rate. He's playing center field. He's playing right field. He's allowing Counsell, because of his diversity and defensive competency across all positions of the outfield, to play selective matchups for PCA, give PCA opportunities to grow and develop and have opportunities like we saw in his first hit and his first home run in that sweeping Astros effort. His value is enormous. And for the amount of money they're paying him, it's exceeded my expectations. I remember having a conversation before 2023 began, and we talked about, oh, Mike Tauchman's going to make the roster? Mike Tauchman of all these other guys, what are they doing here? Credit to the Cubs scouting department for finding traits that are not obvious and capitalizing off of those and getting the value that you're seeing right now, especially when Seiya's out and Bellinger's out. And when they come back, he'll still provide value in the current role that we saw when Bellinger and Seiya was playing.
Yeah, it's just been incredible. I mean, there's for this team and what they've needed, it's you got to give Mike Tauchman his flowers because he has been a huge asset for this team and will continue to be. That type of veteran depth and a guy that can play multiple positions in the outfield, sees pitches, can take walks, has those kind of professional at bats. It's a very valuable thing. And you're certainly seeing that with the Cubs missing two outfielders right now and have already dealt with Ian Happ's injuries as well. I know we had another super chat from Fernando asking about that last play. We can jump in on that. Appreciate that, Fernando. He said, where was Happ on that play? Bad jump. Wow. I did not see the full pulled back replay. My first instinct when I watched the play, we're talking about the play that ended the game on Sunday night. Dansby ranging over, trying to get it on his shoulder. My first instinct was, why did Dansby try to catch that? But then when I watched the replay again, Happ wasn't catching that ball, or if he was, he was going to have to dive, and either way, the run is scoring. So it didn't really matter. I know I didn't see where he was initially positioned, but yeah, obviously you would like for that not to be a ball your shortstop is trying to catch. But either way, I don't think it really mattered. It's one of those balls that's in a bad spot, and it is what it is.
He's still dealing with maybe some lingering hamstring, conservatism with the tightness over the past 2 months. Could be influenced by that. Who knows? Could be a weird thing, too. Some weird thing got lost in the lights. You never know.
Yeah, it happens. It just sort of happens. So I wasn't that mad about it. It's an annoying way to lose a game, but it happens.
In 3 months, you'll forget about it.
Well, and you know, once you put a man on with the walk and you're dealing with that situation with no outs, it's not necessarily something that off as a loss, but it's
that
it's
game is over regardless. Yeah, he catches the ball, drops the ball, you're losing the game. We all felt it.
Yeah. So it is what it is.
It is what it is.
These things happen. Yeah. So I do want to talk about. Well, let's talk about those updates. We mentioned those updates. The Justin Steele stuff is really good, obviously. He looked good in the minimal sort of like footage or pictures we saw on Friday throwing in Arizona. The reports were all that he felt good. We've seen him throwing at Wrigley Field a little bit. So clearly it seems as though the Cubs missed a particularly bad outcome with that injury on opening day. And he will likely be back, you know, if he heads out on a rehab stint soon, a week, 2 weeks, something like that. But he'll be back at some point, hopefully in early May, mid-May, which is great. They need him back, and I obviously would be very excited to have him back. The Wicks thing is a bummer. Hopefully it is not some bigger injury, and he just needs to sit down for a little bit and rest and not push it. Hayden Wisniewski, for a guy that pitched a few days ago and did not know he was going to be making this start, I think until, you know, less than 24 hours before, he gave you a good effort on Sunday Night Baseball. I know you are obviously always going to have kind of specific thoughts on some of these guys, but he's done a nice job in the opportunities he's gotten since he's come up. And again, as we've seen a lot of these guys being asked to play multiple roles. Hey, we need you for an inning today. We need you for a long swingman stint today. Hey, by the way, you're starting on Sunday Night Baseball at Fenway. Like, go get him, kid.
Giddy up.
So it's a tough thing. Their depth is being tested relentlessly, Brendan. We've also seen Morel, you know, nicked up on the hand, nicked up tonight on the foul ball.
Head, shoulders, fine, knees, toes.
Yeah, this team's depth is being really, really harshly tested. So I think Steele coming back, of course, he was almost a Cy Young winner candidate last year. He's your best pitcher. He's an all-star. Of course, getting him back is going to be a good thing. But just with how much this staff is being tested and this pitching staff as a whole, he cannot get back soon enough.
Oh, my gosh. I can't wait till he's back on the mound. If you look at the number of innings that the staff has used, it's kind of shocking at first. The leading innings guy on the Cubs after Imanaga, 27 2/3, is Javier Assad, someone that was slotted in as a multiple inning reliever guy. Third on the list is Ben Brown at 23 innings, someone who started the year in Iowa. Right. So you think about that. The third guy leading innings was not even on the opening day roster. Jordan Wicks, who's now on the IL from a forearm strain, is tied with Ben Brown in third with those 23 innings. After that, Kyle Hendricks is on the IL and was pitching really poorly. Perhaps the concept is it's a phantom IL stint. After that, it's been trying to supplement the staff with bullpen days, with long inning relief, filling in voids due to high leverage challenges. Drew Smyly, 12 innings. Mark Leiter, who gave up the game on Sunday with 12 innings as well. It's been a challenge, man, a really big challenge, all while trying to handle guys going through adjustments in the pen. Yency Almonte, Jose Kwas in AAA, Luke Little, up and down from AAA, dealing with command issues at times. It's been a real big challenge, not only trying to get guys right, but filling innings in high leverage roles and in the starting rotation. You could not have given Craig Counsell a more challenging start to the season. Yeah. And to start again, to keep hammering this down with a 17-11 start is mind-boggling. We are fortunate. Doesn't mean you're not concerned going in the next few weeks, but really we are fortunate that we're in this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and again, just to finish that up, and then we should hit our first ad break here. I'll read, we got another super chat. You guys are being very generous to us.
I guess the Cubs should keep losing. We get a lot more super chats.
I do just want to finish again. The sound of it was optimistic on the Wicks front. Like I said, sometimes when you hear the forearm, that's sometimes a precursor to worse things, but
it sounded reminiscent of Justin Steele's forearm injury last May, where they said the same thing. Precaution. Right. Wicks is not going to get imaging. That's enough for me to be like, okay, this is good. I think, although they've done that in the past.
The only, of course, it's just a bummer though. Like obviously Wicks trying to settle in, trying to continue to grow and make adjustments. And you just never like for these things to be interrupted with an injury, and you just hope there's no setbacks from that. So hopefully this is not a lengthy thing, minimum IL stint for Wicks, and he can get back into that rotation. Because again, even with Justin Steele hopefully coming back in a week or two, a couple weeks, whatever it may be, you need that depth. The more depth that they can have, the better. So we'll read this other super chat we have, and then we will hit our first break. When we come back, I do want to talk about Javier Assad and Shota Imanaga and how great they have been, and especially this week. This one from Burnt Chihuahua. We appreciate that. So far with so many injuries and guys who are a little bit lost right now, it's not bad. Just one of those games you forget and reset for the next. But I also want to know on this day, what was the Cubs record last year? appreciate that super chat. Again, you guys are being very kind to us, so we appreciate that. Appreciate y'all just being in the live chat, watching live or listening whenever you are. The answer through 28 games last year, the 2023 Chicago Cubs were 15-13. So okay. A couple games better this year.
Okay.
A couple games better, obviously a very different roster, very different circumstances. 2024 off to a slightly better pace this time. So let's hit our first ad break. And then when we come back, we will talk about just how good Javier Assad has been, not just this year, but as a starter in his MLB career and the first five starts of Shota Imanaga's legendary MLB career.
It's grilling season. Get your pork. The International Society of Sports Nutrition recommends that people who are involved in a general fitness program or who are interested in optimizing their health, eat low-fat, high-quality sources of protein, which include lean cuts of pork. Elevate your pork game, your protein game with lean pork, a powerhouse of natural goodness. Savor the flavor, savor the gains, and celebrate any occasion by enjoying the best pork produced by Illinois pig farmers. From sausage and bacon for breakfast to pulled pork or juicy chops, hot off the grill, it's an entire season dedicated to pork and the people behind the product. This is paid for by the Illinois pork producers, generations of commitments. Penrose Brewing, Geneva, Illinois. Seltz Up, hard seltzers with real fruit led by Lemon Seltz Up, a national gold medal winning hard seltzer with real lemons. We created our unique twist on a lemon shakeup with a house-made hard seltzer and period lemons for a throwback to warm weather and county fairs. I'm a big lemon guy. This is right up my alley.
Sure.
Penrose is available at your local beverage retailer or visit Penrose's tap room in Geneva. For more information, go to penrosebrewing.com or follow them on social media at Penrose Brewing.
All right, Brendan. So we're waiting for Steele to come back. Wicks is now on the IL. Kyle Hendricks is in phantom land, sort of in pitcher phantom purgatory lands at the moment on the IL. And I'm not sure.
Hey, man, you never know. You could have a back injury.
We're not talking about
my Kyle. Back is killing me, by the way, too.
Javier Assad
has
just been so good for this team. I wrote down in his career now, so his full career, not just this year, as a starter. He's obviously spent some time as a reliever, a multi-inning reliever. He's played multiple roles. As a starter, 117 and a third innings pitched, a 2.76 ERA for Javier Assad. And this is a guy who sort of routinely, like, has been questioned, I think, by the media and, you know, different pundits and things like that. Is he someone who can start? Can he have length? Is his stuff good enough, et cetera, et cetera? And all he keeps doing is going out and getting results for this team. We talk about guys who have stepped up and, like, where would the Cubs be without someone like Mike Tauchman, for example, or other players that have contributed to their success over the last couple of years. I'm not sure that Javier Assad is not near the top of the list of guys that aren't the big money players, aren't the guys that you earmarked for being your biggest contributors, and he is just nails, dude.
He's one of those outlier pitchers. You said, well, why don't the media or some of the pundits, if you will, trust Assad? There can also be an argument that because Assad was never slotted in, even going into this year, as a starting pitcher, there may be some distrust even with Javier Assad's stuff playing long-term by the Cubs themselves. Not a bad thing. Javier Assad is very valuable. Six different pitch types: sinker, slider, cutter, curve, etc., changeup. He has them all. He has every pitch that you would want. The challenge that the Cubs have been trying to reconcile is, to what degree can they expect this value going forward if his stuff doesn't appear like any other pitcher in recent memory? Few guys go out there and have consistent, you know, two ERA stretches with a fastball that's 92, 93, 94, doesn't have that much carry. Few guys have that success with sliders that are not thrown that fast or don't have that much depth. Across the board, Javier Assad's pitches don't rate above league average from stuff graders or run probability predictors. So there's one sense of trying to anticipate whether or not he should be given opportunities in the starting rotation. At the same time, with Javier Saad, there are guys who are outliers, including him, I think, which means when you look at stuff and you try to grade stuff, the way that these models work is they make an assumption. The assumption is they are grading pitchers all within some sort of natural distribution, whereas Javier Saad is outside of the norm. To grade his stuff as if he throws with a similar release point, or if he has a combination of horizontal vertical break that is like most of the major league pitchers, is not accurate. So the Cubs, I think now, as he starts to have more success, will trust him more. And it could be one reason why we even see Kyle on the IL right now, the phantom IL, if you will. Because now as time goes on, as you just laid out those numbers from Javier Saad over the past year, there's more confidence that this could be a long-lasting thing. I talked to you before we came on. I'm like, listen, I don't know what to think of Javier Saad. I watch every start. I am never feeling uncomfortable with him on the mound. He looks like he's making every batter off balance with all these different pitch types. I don't understand it. I'm fascinated by it. And I think if I were to bet going forward, we should see similar output, maybe not the two ERA, but as time goes on, the idea of him being a starting pitcher consistently is starting to make more sense. Now, people will scoff at that, but I think the Cubs as well might be trusting that more.
Look, you can't argue with the results. And I think, you know, of course, we live in such a data-driven and analytic world, especially within the game of baseball, that, you know, there are going to be those guys where you kind of squint and are like, I'm not sure how this is happening, yeah. Or he's not rating as well as these other guys, but the dude just delivers results. And I think it was Tyler in the YouTube chat just said he battles, he's got that dog in him. And like, it sounds silly to say, but like, maybe that's just what it is. You know, he's just going out there with the stuff that he has, he battles, and you can't argue with the results. And I read his numbers as a starter over the last couple of years as a Cub. His numbers so far in 2024, he's got a 2 ERA flat.
It's nuts.
You can't argue with it. 27 innings, 2 ERA, like Javier Saad has just, and over the last calendar year, now, of course, you're not considering length in this. That's the next step for him if he truly wants to like continue to elevate his game. But just in terms of results, he's been one of the better pitchers in the league.
You said maybe he doesn't have the best stuff. We don't know that. Maybe his stuff is that good because they're getting their results.
Well, Mark Leiter Jr. said it was.
Mark Leiter Jr. said before 2023, he had the best fastball on the team. I thought it was a joke. And so all this time, he was being genuine about that. It's crazy.
He was right. He was just telling the truth. But
he was just telling the truth.
Javier Saad has been unbelievable for this team. And I look forward to when he pitches, Brendan. Like he, you just feel like he is going to keep this team in the game. He's going to battle and he's going to give you a good quality start. And that is what he has done. Of course, the length is a tough thing. You want more length, but again, you have to consider this is a guy who has been in very different roles throughout his career. And just as his time as a Cub, it's very difficult to expect 7-8 inning starts and for him not to kind of wear down a little bit or lose effectiveness in that fifth or sixth, seventh inning, getting up to 80, 90, 100 pitches when, you know, he's been asked to be a reliever, a long reliever,
career.
Starter, up, down. It's tough. So I think right now that's, of course, where the Cubs are going to want him to go. He's got these opportunities. They're going to want him to continue developing as a starter, but you have to give him the room to kind of grow into that. It's a tough thing for him to immediately just be able to go out there and pitch 8 innings and, you know, maintain that effectiveness.
And I think there's going to be a measuring stick against Saad and Hendricks or Saad and Ben Brown, when in reality, I don't think that even exists. This team will need innings out of all of those guys.
Yeah.
Right? So whether it's Saad starting every fifth day up until July, you need to, you know, bring him back for a start or two to rest him. These guys will be getting significant innings. Again, right now, we have Saad, who's essentially leading the team in innings, and behind him is Ben Brown. These guys will get innings. It's almost moot to discuss whether or not this pitcher should be in place of that pitcher.
Well, and the other thing too, you know, when you're talking about Javier Saad, continuing on that, where he's played different roles and things like that, Saad, Wicks, Ben Brown, if he continued to get the opportunities, Hayden Wisniewski would fall into this. And of course, when he comes back, Justin Steele's going to fall in this. So does Shota. Yeah. These are all guys you have to monitor their usage.
Shota was pitching once every 6 days back in Japan. So
these are all guys that you can't necessarily rely on for 200 innings and 35 starts throughout the year. Their arm hasn't been asked to do that, or hasn't been asked to do that at the major league level. So as you were saying, you're going to need the depth. Guys don't necessarily need to get skipped or have a rest because of performance, but this team is winning. They're in, it's April, but they were almost in first place if they win the game tonight. So at some point you have to be thinking about getting through September, getting through October, and like managing these innings and being prepared to be in a pennant race, because last year it wasn't necessarily the starters, but it was the bullpen. It was also the offense playing every day and kind of running out of gas. Craig Counsell, I'm sure, has talked to Jed Hoyer about that last year, and they're going to have specific plans in place to make sure that everybody doesn't run out of gas and is nice and fresh as we get down the road here. And I think that's also the answer. I saw it earlier in the chat of why are the Cubs managing Cade Horton's innings? It's the same thing. Yeah. You know, I think the Pirates were doing that a little bit. Is it Skennis? Skens? I've never heard it pronounced, honestly.
Listen, I don't even care.
You and I don't know. We're going to get called idiots for not knowing that. The really good prospect on the Pirates, right? You know, you manage the innings because you want those bullets potentially at the MLB level. You don't want them wasting too many bullets at AA or AAA. They get their work in, work on their stuff. Skeens. Okay. Thank you, Daniel, in the YouTube chat. I've never heard it said out loud, so I truly just don't know. Anyway, I'll read another super chat. Again, we really appreciate that, you guys, and I appreciate your super chats have fed into the conversation, so that makes things a lot easier for us. The Hook says the good thing about these injuries is development. I think it's good for the players on the roster as well as in the system. Yeah. In general, developing pitching is always a roller coaster. Horton is coming. Yeah. It gives different guys opportunities. You have to manage the bullets anyway. You don't want any serious injuries or things that linger or set guys back, but it does provide an opportunity for other guys to step in. You know, again, Hayden not getting this start, if not for an injury, you know, Wicks and Assad because of performance injuries, things like that. That's how they get those opportunities in the first place. So sometimes it does, one door closes, another one opens. I want to talk about Shota too, before we hit our second ad break in a few minutes here. Shota on Friday, stellar again. The Cubs' lone win in this series coming with Shota pitching on the season. He started 5 games, Brendan. He is 4-0, 27 2/3 innings pitched, and he has an ERA that is sub-1.
Man,
he has just been, as advertised, fantastic. He's a joy to watch. He very clearly has his PFPs down, Brendan. We saw that on Friday. Yeah. He knows how to field his position.
He could play shortstop even as a lefty. I'm convinced.
Okay.
He's got Dansby's hair.
Put Shota at third. Let Morel pitch. They can switch
I'm
off.
Telling you, I'm here for that.
I don't know if you have anything on specifically what he's doing and how he's executing things. I did think it was interesting. I was actually watching the Boston broadcast on Friday, occasionally just see what other teams are talking about and when the Cubs are in town. And they were noting that, you know, Shota was living up with that fastball, Tyler O'Neill on the homer that he hit, kind of waiting for it. Shota didn't get it up enough. Tyler attacked and jumped on it. But then, of course, the rest of the game, he settles in, limits the damage, and he's just been so good. Brendan, I mean, sub-1, I believe there's only one qualified pitcher that has an ERA lower than Shota Imanaga right now.
He's a diverse pitcher. So Tyler O'Neill is a good example, right? Tyler O'Neill has been feasting on high fastballs. There will come a point in time this year where Shota does give up a few home runs. He has a very carry-driven four-seam fastball that, if not located well, for example, if he misses down in the zone, then it's going to give up some fly balls on a windy day at Wrigley that go over the ivy. That is going to be what happens. Shota, though, the surprise for me has been the third pitch type. The two pitch types we know, four-seam fastball, splitter, as advertised, having success. The third pitch type, the slider, has exceeded my expectations. But when Tommy Hotovy came on our show and said, hey, Shota Imanaga has some stuff with his breaking pitch. That is interesting that we think we can mold to be a good pitch. We're seeing that. So his slider grades a little bit better than league average, which all I think he needs to do is have a third pitch to be league average. Now, what does that slider do? It allows Shota to have another pitch to left-handed batters and maybe at times sparingly against right-handed batters. If he thinks a left-handed batter will not be missing and whiffing on his splitter and he needs something to sweep away from the barrel, well, he has a slider with 10 inches of horizontal that is twice that than the major league average. Now combine the different pitch types, the four seam, the sinker, changeup, or a splitter and slider with stellar command and the work ethic and the attitude and diving into American baseball culture and really feeling like he's part of the team, you get a 99th percentile outcome, which is what we're seeing. It's been impressive. It's exceeded my expectations. And right now in Steele's absence, he's carried this staff. He has been the substitute ace, if you will.
Yeah, I like that. And he also said, I know we're all thinking it, but there was one good thing that came from that just disaster of an ESPN Sunday Night Baseball broadcast.
Awful.
No, and that was the interview with Shota that let us know that when they asked him what food he had been interested in Chicago, he said deep dish pizza, but he can only have one slice and then he gets full.
I'm the same way, actually.
That's the quality analysis.
Yeah.
Brutal, that broadcast. I mean, they're missing plays, Brendan. Like they're cutting the camera away from the fly ball. It's insane.
I don't want to criticize. We get criticized all the time. You and I do. I don't want to criticize other people, but I will say, from a fan who just wants to see what baseball is like,
yeah,
it's not good when you're not talking about the game. They need to talk about the game more. I need to bring more. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think it's fair to ask a little more of the worldwide leader in sports.
I will say, though, and not to like pander to you, this is like a true, genuine statement.
Okay.
When you listen to Pat Hughes call a baseball game, there's one thing he does all the time, in addition to this is a turning point, you know, all of his, you know, slogans. He asks Ron, what do you think's coming next, Ronnie?
Mm-hmm.
All the time. What does that do? It dials you in on what's going on in the context. Ron says, well, he's throwing two fastballs, so 2-0 count, not having a four-seam command. Maybe he'll throw in a slider. Next thing you know, slider in, 2-1. It dials you in. It keeps the attention on the game. Yeah. And it doesn't, my last point, because I'll go off on a tangent, it doesn't make sense when we put these guys in the Hall of Fame. Pat Hughes is in the Hall of Fame. Yet you, for future broadcasts, do the exact opposite of what Pat Hughes does well by bringing in these storylines and these narratives that detract from what's going on
when,
the field.
Like, Carl Ravitch, try not to talk about the Yankees in a game they're not playing challenge, failed every other inning.
Again, and not I, listen, in the dude, game. I grew up watching Carl Ravitch in Baseball Tonight. I like Carl Ravitch. Yeah. I like all the guys on ESPN, on the Baseball Tonight show. I like them, but the narratives and the tone, I said this, needs a desperate overhaul. It's not good for the sport. You're not bringing in fans, even though that's your intention.
Yeah. All my homies love Shota. All my homies hate the Sunday Night Baseball broadcast. That's all I know.
Progressively more disappointing.
Yes. We are going to hit our second ad break here, and then we will jump back and continue to talk about the Chicago Cubs. I think we'll come back. Why don't we talk about PCA? He had a very nice week.
Yeah.
I think that was good to see. Because we mentioned, and I'm going to steal one from the page of Carl Ravitch tonight, though, and I am going to talk about the Yankees for 2 seconds before
Look
we hit this break. I want to congratulate Anthony Rizzo on his 300th career home run.
Like
Anthony Rizzo is forever a Chicago Cub.
Who did he hit it against?
In the city of Chicago. He hit it against the Milwaukee Brewers.
The Milwaukee Brewers. Thank you.
He tried to help the Cubs into first place today.
He did.
The Cubs just didn't handle their end of the bargain. But I know he's a viewer of this show. Congratulations.
Big fan of
us. Vincent Rizzo on your 300th home run. Love you forever, Tony. And yes, as Gary says, we can talk about Matt Mervis.
Oh, Gary, we're talking about Madrigal and Mervis, and we're talking about Jake Slaughter. We are going
to. We have to hit our second ad break here,
right,
so we will be back in a second.
Some beers can say they're brewed for baseball, but only Blue Moon is brewed by baseball. Beer and baseball just go together, and no beer goes better than the one that was literally born in a ballpark. Imagine taking in a crisp, bright Blue Moon at beautiful historic Wrigley Field on a 120 Friday afternoon with the Cubs in first place. Wow. That's a dream. I know. Look at that. A beer this good only comes around once in a Blue Moon, but you can enjoy it all season long. Bring the ballpark to you with Blue Moon Belgian style wheat ale. It's one of a kind every time. Get Blue Moon delivered by visiting get.bluemoonbeer.com/CHGO to see your delivery options. That's get.bluemoonbeer.com/CHGO. Blue Moon made brighter. Celebrate responsibly. Blue Moon Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. Drive home a winner this April after visiting our partner, Ray Chevrolet. They're sharing their best offers of the year. Make your way to Ray Chevrolet on Route 12 in Fox Lake to join in on the savings. As one of the top-selling Chevy dealers in the Midwest, you'll always be able to shop one of Chicagoland's largest Chevy inventories. Plus, you can find the perfect tailgate vehicle for a limited time. They're offering 0% financing for 72 months on new Silverados with over 100 available. And to top it all off, they're pricing over 125 vehicles under $20,000. Seriously, guys, can pricing get more affordable? Get a free oil change at Ray Chevrolet in Fox Lake when you mention CHGO. A free oil change. And all you need to do is mention CHGO when scheduling your oil change. Start off the new year right and schedule it by April 30th. So only two more days. Visit Ray Chevrolet in Fox Lake or RayChevrolet.com. They've been serving the community since 1963. Find new roads.
All right, Brendan, let's talk a little bit about PCA. Okay, let's talk about the Matt Mervis Madrigal thing because our YouTube chat is freaking out about it.
All right.
So you guys already know how I feel.
Glass of water?
Nick Madrigal coming into that at bat had a 62 WRC plus
for his career.
Yeah. Kenley Jensen, I believe, has been somewhat of a reverse splits guy, but he's also just really good. So sometimes I don't necessarily care so much about the splits, right? Like, he's just really good. But he throws that cutter, obviously, notoriously. So this year, I think he's actually been harder on righties, but throughout his career, I think he's been somewhat of a reverse splits guy. So what, right? Like, Madrigal has been awful at the plate this year. You guys, and I'm not even being a hater right now. You guys know how I feel about it, but
how do you feel about it?
He should never be pinch hitting for anybody unless it is a situation where you must have contact.
Yeah.
Must have contact. And that was not what this situation was. And it does say something, I think, about Matt Mervis that he's a lefty. He's supposed to be here for the power that he showed at AAA, and reverse splits on Kenley or not, you're getting pinch hit for a guy that can't hit. So Mervis hasn't hit at the MLB level either. But if you're not getting that opportunity with nobody on trying to, you know, provide the big run in a game, what are we doing here? Why is he here?
That's a great question. Why is he here?
And why not Patrick Wisdom in that spot as people are asking, like, try to hit a dinger. Like, what is Madrigal is. Anyway, I'll stop.
You don't have to
He's a sub 60 WRC plus. I don't need to say anything else. That's not hate.
I get it. Craig Council was asked about Nick Madrigal last week. Craig Council said, despite the 57 WRC plus, he didn't say that stat, by the way, it's just me interjecting that. He said, despite Madrigal's lack of base hits, he's still hitting line drives, and he feels as if you can roll your eyes. That's fine. He feels as if over a consistent stretch, those line drives are going to fall. Kind of like what happened to Nico. That's the logic. You've seen Nick Madrigal, even when he's not hitting, substitute Morel 7th, 8th innings. To Craig Council's credit, on a plate appearance per game number, he's only getting about 1.5 plate appearances per game versus about 3.5 last year. So he's using Madrigal in the role he's designed to play in. My thinking is, which is probably stupid, but my thinking is, given that you have Seiya out and Bellinger out and Wisdom, who's coming back from injury, and they may still have to shake off some rust, let's get to this team the highest outcome guys. Let's bring in guys with pop. I'm feeling more comfortable with Morel defensively.
He's good. He's in good place tonight.
Although he had a fourth row in the last seventh or eighth inning, but he's looked generally much better. My thinking is, given that we're having offensive problems and you're seeing growth from Morel's defense and you're seeing Madrigal struggle and not get consistent at-bats, send down Madrigal, bring up someone who deserves a promotion, who's been performing well. I do think it makes sense to lay your cards right and promote Jake Slaughter right now. Slaughter deserves it. I'm not pandering to Gary in the chat.
Never been endorsed on the show before.
But I mean, I think it does make some sense right now, both to get Madrigal going. That way, when Bellinger is back, when Seiya is back and the offense is clicking, then Madrigal's role makes some sense. But when this team needs offense, especially in the late innings, like you saw today, Matt Mervis is not necessarily supplying that, nor can you expect him to do that. Patrick Wisdom.
Yeah.
I love Wisdom, but again, coming back from injury, increase your chances. Right now, I want to increase the chance for a fly ball to the outfield. Madrigal is not going to do that for me. So Slaughter. I'll read off his stat line. I'll throw it back to you for Slaughter. Sure. So right now, actually, I don't have it in front of me, but I'm sure.
But yeah.
Gary, okay, I have it right here. He's batting .323, four home runs, and 76 plate appearances. If you ran into all those, you know, numbers in AAA, .437 WOBA, .156 WRC plus.
Yeah. So also just for clarity, because I saw it in the YouTube chat, Tyler said, whoa, a Nico comparison to Madrigal. Craig Council said that.
I'm not kidding, not Tyler.
Yeah. just for clarity, that was Craig Council doing that, not us. So the chat is obviously going to want Matt Shaw. I'm not sure, you know, I think it would be very early for that, but you never know. They have a plan for guys like Cade Horton and Matt Shaw, and I don't think they're going to deviate from that.
Slaughter can play third base and second base. Yeah. So we saw Dansby get spelled in that blowout, and you put Nico at shortstop. You know, if you want to give Dansby a day off, you can put Nico at shortstop and have Slaughter play second base if you need to.
Yeah.
For the current going.
Moral of the point being, I talked when I was in studio earlier this week with Luke and Cody that in particular, you know, for someone like Mervis, it's a tough situation. You come up, then get set down, stuff like that. You're playing irregularly, but you have to show something at some point. And thus far, he has not. The hit that drove in a run tonight on Sunday night was a pretty routine ground out. It just happened that the first baseman was playing a good bit off the first baseline, so it goes into right for a hit. And those all count. It all counts the same. But when you look at his body of work, you are not seeing the guy that was performing the way he was at AAA. He's up here to slug. He's not a particularly good defender. He's not a particularly good base runner. He has got to slug and slug a lot. And he has not shown that. Again, limited opportunity. And I acknowledge it's a tough spot for guys to come up and do this, but the opportunities are not going to be endless. At some point, the team needs production out of that DH spot, or they need to utilize it to keep guys fresh. You have to show something eventually. And when you're facing a righty, reverse splits throughout his career or not, that, and you get pinch hit for a guy that is, you know, 40% below the average hitter. I mean,
that's pretty crazy
hitter,
that happened tonight.
That's not a good sign if you're Matt Mervis. It's not a good sign, and it's not really a good spot for Nick Madrigal either. So it does speak to kind of their depth and how the bench is being utilized.
Were you surprised when he got the call and Cooper was DFA'd and traded? Were you surprised?
Yes and no. I mean, I think, you know, Cooper had some good games earlier in the year that I think were kind of buoying those stats and hadn't really been super effective, you know, on a game-to-game basis. But, you know, the overall numbers were good, and that's kind of what they brought him in for, was just to kind of hit. But with Wisdom coming back, and I think the hope for Mervis, whether they wanted him to come up and kind of take a spot on the bench or become the everyday DH, whatever, at some point, guy performs in AAA enough. You either need to see if he can do it for you at the MLB level or somebody else. And you kind of hope he can come up and show it for a little bit. And then you make a decision. Do we want him on our bench or playing DH? Do we want to trade him? We need some maybe bullpen help, et cetera, et cetera. You have to show it at some point. And he is certainly not. He's got a .321 OPS. So that's, you know, and he obviously wasn't particularly good last year. So you need a DH that can hit. So that's not going to get it done. And the opportunities aren't endless, whether it's a tough situation or not. Jordo, of course, I acknowledge Roman Reigns. As an aside, Brendan's going to get mad at me. We skipped over that to and I want to talk about PCA. I want to talk about the week that PCA had, and just kind of dig into this. Obviously, he wins a game against Houston with a home run. That was awesome. A huge moment for him. His first MLB hit is a game-winning home run into the bleachers at Wrigley Field. Really doesn't get much better than that. And watching him round the bases just was everything I think that you want to see from a Cubs rookie. Overall, now hitting .385 with an OPS over 1,000. Of course, this is only 13 at-bats, but given how overmatched he looked last year. And as we said, when he was called up this time, this is another tough ask. He wasn't performing very well in AAA. But one thing that I talked about with Cody and Luke earlier this week during that Houston series, when I did the postgame show in the studio, was I was really glad that PCA was getting an opportunity in not a pennant race. Last year, an extremely difficult situation to come into. One, you had a philosophy, and we're not debating this, but it was the philosophy of kind of riding the guys that had gotten you there. So tough to crack that as a rookie and a young player coming up. But every game was live and die. They needed every win, every loss was basically knocking them out of the playoffs. And so I'm glad that PCA is coming up now, even if he was struggling in AAA at the plate, offensively still making adjustments, getting an opportunity to do this where the stakes are lower. So many guys are hurt. They're not in the middle of the pennant race. It's April. Come up, get some experience, take it easy. And he's shown a lot in this early going. He looks a lot better at the plate. He went to the opposite field off of the Green Monster. You saw that, I think, on Saturday, ripping one into that left center gap. That's nice to see. Showing off his speed. As I said on the game on Sunday night, he made a really nice play, streaking, just showing off that speed into the left center gap to catch a ball that otherwise was going to get down there. He looks good. I obviously, you got to keep it going, and we still need to see, of course, you know, some real growth and sustained success at the plate. But given how it started last year, this is a very nice to see him start and just get that kind of that monkey off your back. Right.
Oh, for sure.
Like, just get that first hit out of the way, that first big moment out of the way, put up some hits, feel good. That's got to feel great for him.
For me, the sustained success is going to correlate with making more contact. In AAA, making contact at a 72% rate, that's 3 percentage points lower than the major league average. So he's making below league average for a guy who doesn't project to hit 30 plus home runs. That is going to be the room for growth that he has to show at some point. Can that be done this year? Well, Kirk Hassel says it's not necessary. Where his role right now is to play good defense, to run the bases well, and to perform offensively in roles.
Yeah.
Now, he's succeeding and beyond that in the first, 14 plate appearances or so, but that's going to be his role this year. He will likely go back down AAA at some point when Bellinger's back and or Seiya is back, and he'll continue to try to show the room for growth. But I do think if we want to be really optimistic about PCA's max value, then that optimism is probably not deserved for 2024 right now. He's going to have to show the improvements at the plate in the form of making more contact. If he can make league average contact and have Dansby-esque power, well, that's one of the best outcomes the front office can ask for, because that projects like a 4-5 win player. The sustained success has to come in more contact, but for the time being, what he's doing is what Kirk Hassel wants him to do.
Yeah. Well, and again, remember, so this is a guy who now has 27 MLB at-bats in his career.
As a 22-year-old.
And in March turned 22. He's a young, freshly 22. So you got to give him, again, that's why I'm glad this is happening in April this time versus September in the middle of a do-or-die pennant race. He's hitting ninth. Take your time. Make your adjustments. You've got time to develop. He does not need to be the star that a lot of us hope he can be right at this moment.
And I love that he's playing consistently too.
Well, so I was going to say that.
Yeah.
That's the difference. And again, We're not relitigating the strategy last year, sure, but that like was one of that was one of the things that a lot of people objected to. You know, Canario gets a big hit, immediately doesn't play for another week. PCA plays one day, then doesn't play in the field for 4 days. Et cetera.
We had this discussion when they were in Arizona last year, September. Why is PCA not playing in center field?
I just like that Council is letting him ride a little bit. He has a good game. He plays the next day. And I think that's the healthy attitude. If he's making those plays you want on defense, if he's doing the things you want to see on the base pass, he got a bunt down to bring in a run earlier this week. Like, if he's doing those little things, let him adjust at the plate. Obviously, right now, you're without Cody Bellinger. You're without Seiya Suzuki, your two best hitters. Christopher Morel has not hit like he has, as he had in the beginning of the year. You'd like other guys to be contributing on offense, but that's not PCA's burden to wear. And I'm glad to hear that Council and hopefully the front office staff, they're not putting that on him.
Yeah.
He's his own. It's similar to sort of what I said about Cade Horton or Matt Shaw. And when they bring him up, you want to do what you can to win now and to help the team, but you also have to have your own kind of development plan for these players. And often you can't just abandon that because the MLB team has a particular need at the moment. Either a guy is ready and you want him getting those opportunities and you believe that that is going to not only help the team now, but help that player achieve success for them during their career with the Cubs, or you don't view it that way. And you usually don't want to shoehorn that if you really disagree with it, just because the opportunity arises. I did want to read an update. I'm reading this from Sahadev Sharma. This was earlier on Sunday, I believe. He said, Cody Bellinger took dry swings yesterday and hit off a tee today. You saw him throughout the Sunday Night Baseball broadcast, looked to be in good spirits.
You see the photo of him at PCA?
Yeah. And he was hopeful that his timeline could be similar to when he injured his ribs in 2021 and had a minimum stay.
That would be just phenomenal.
That would be great.
Yeah.
Again, hopefully you're just avoiding the worst case scenario with some of these things. So Seiya had begun resuming baseball activities. Hopefully he's working his way back soon in a couple weeks, few weeks, maybe. Maybe Bellinger can be on a similar timeline. And look, you kind of just have to not necessarily tread water. They've done better than tread water in dealing with these injuries, but that's the thing. I know Luke likes to say, just get through all of this kind of being around 500. I think they've done better than that. So that's kind of giving them a lot of wiggle room, but yeah, you're dealing with a lot. Not every team is equipped to take all of these injuries. And there's certainly going to be a good segment of the fan base and probably fans of other teams that have a cry me a river kind of attitude with the injuries. A lot of teams have injuries. Some teams are without their stars and this, that, and the other. We're watching the Cubs and analyzing the Cubs. The Cubs have a lot of injuries, and their roster was not necessarily as well constructed as some other teams. So they're dealing with a lot, and right now they're doing the absolute best that I think they can. So that's all to say, I'm very happy with the week that PCA had to kind of bring it back in a full circle way. We do have one more ad break here. We can read at the hour mark and then we can come back and chit chat a little bit. We don't have to get out of here right in an hour.
Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. They are the easiest and most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. It's just you against the numbers, and baseball season is underway, so don't miss out on your chance to add your favorite players from the diamond in your prize pick entries, whether it's strikeouts, RBIs, or first inning runs. Take your pick of more or less and add them to your prize pick entry today. Prize Picks now offers Apple Pay for quick and easy deposits into your account this season. You can bet on Mike Tauchman hitting another home run in New York, or Nico Hoerner getting more base hits in game one of that Mets game. Go to prizepicks.com/CHGO. Use code CHGO for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/CHGO. Use code CHGO. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
All right. So, Brendan, a couple of things I want to talk about before we get out of here. We don't have to run too long tonight. Nice comment from our good friend Cody Del Mendo. This team has grit. I like this team. Do I love them? Not yet, but we're on our way. I think if they had come back and won that game tonight, we all would have been in love with them. But alas, they didn't let us fall too in love with them tonight. But I saw it from, it was in the chat earlier in our YouTube chat. Wanted to say Chicago Cousins the 11th said he just subscribed while watching our show. So we appreciate that, subscribing to the CHGO Sports YouTube page. And I can't find it, so I apologize.
That's fine.
I believe it was from Steven. Talking about the defense on this team and how it has not really been as tight as I think we'd want it to be. Dansby with some uncharacters, but not really that one tonight. That was a tough play, but we've seen him, you know, muff a couple. Nico has a few errors. Michael Bush, obviously sort of a learning experience at first. That's not where his primary experience is. Everybody debating that ball that fell, where was Ian Happ, that kind of thing. The situation at third base is an ongoing experiment. But the overall thing I think I would say on that is Bush is learning first base. So you're going to have to just eat some of that. He's working on his footwork. He's learning. They talked about it on the broadcast. He obviously has spent a lot of time at third base. So you watch that ball that's kind of in between that I think they give Nico an error on. That's a tough error for Nico in this game on Sunday night. At third base, you're going to get balls that are hit that direction to your right. Now you're playing first base, so obviously a different thing. You kind of have to readjust, and it's probably, I feel like, and you can tell me, you played baseball. You famously tell me that you probably were going to be a major leaguer.
I dislocated my knee twice.
Just like Ben Wyatt. He was the starting shortstop on the varsity baseball team, but nobody ever wants to talk about that.
I almost got into politics too.
Great.
Could have been a mayor.
But I do imagine that it's tough to like configure your brain. It seems easy to me watching to say, Michael, Nico's behind you. Just let him get the ball. That's probably tough for a professional baseball player to adjust to, like, hey, I got a Gold Glover behind me. I'm just going to get out of the way.
Well, at third base, you're taught to attack the ball. So if there's one, an in-betweener between shortstop and third base, the coaches say, oh, go get the ball as a third baseman. So if you reverse it and mirror it to first base to second base, that's your instinct. You do it. I'm not really focused in on that for Bush defensively. I'm looking at his footwork at first base when he's just catching baseballs from third base, shortstop, second base. And there are times where he's not quite comfortable yet. And you're seeing that with not being able to pick baseballs. You're seeing on some of Dansby's short throws that, of course, he needs to throw a little bit higher in the chest. You're seeing a regular major league first baseman catch those, whereas Bush is having difficulties catching that. But you made the analogy, I think, a few weeks ago. It's a hockey analogy, like plus one or something like that. Is that the analogy you gave? Uh-huh. That's a perfect way to describe this. So he's outperforming offensively, and you have to go through those growing pains defensively if you want to get that offensive production. The bulk value is very good in a 162-game sample. To get to the point where you want to trust him defensively requires us being skeptics and a little uncomfortable at times in April. It's part of the process. Guys grow. Morel's grown. Even Bush, I think, has grown. He did scoop that last ball by Christopher Morel in the 7th or 8th inning of Sunday's game. It's growth. It's going to take some time.
Yeah. And so that's all just to say, the original comment from Steven in our YouTube chat was just sort of expressing frustration with the defense overall. And I hear you. You know, the Cubs, as we've said for the last couple of years, they need to be tight on those margins. They need to be smart on the bases. They need to make the right decisions on the bases. They need to be tight on defense. That's one of the ways that a team like this is going to win. And if you plan to be in a tight division race or a tight wild card race like they were last year, you got to do those things well. You have to do those little things well. You don't really have an offense that you can just count on to score enough runs to kind of mask some of that stuff all the time. Your depth and your pitching is being tested relentlessly. So you got to be good on those things. But at the same time, you have a guy learning third base and trying to get better and has gotten better. Christopher Morel looks a lot better than when we started this season or when he started the experiment in spring training. And Bush has not always played first base. So these are just two things that are calculated risks on the Cubs' part. I get being frustrated by it. I am too, but you have to let them get the reps to get better. And that's just how it's going to be. And you hope that those little miscommunications or errors or little mistakes don't happen in those big moments. And I think for the most part, they've been good. And hopefully we can continue to get better, like I think we all feel about Christopher Morel. And yes, I do see the comments. Christopher Morel's bat needs to heat up.
And hit up too.
And hit up. Yes. Hit up. Last thing I think I wanted to chat with y'all about, if anybody has anything else in the YouTube chat, drop it in there. But just curious your thoughts on the bullpen. Obviously the pitching staff moving around a lot in the game on Sunday. Of course, we see Hayden Wisniewski go 4 innings, 5 hits, just 1 earned, 3 strikeouts, 1 walk. He was good. Again, like I said, for not having too much notice that he was starting this game and just pitching a few days ago. Then we see Lovelady, who came up when Wicks went to the IL and Luke Little was sent down. He pitches a clean inning, a walk, and a strikeout. Yency Almonte been very up and down, has good stuff, but you know, obviously has outings like he did on Sunday night, an inning, 2 hits. 2 earned runs, 2 walks, and 2 strikeouts, so not very good. Daniel Palencia looked fantastic. Yeah. On Sunday night, touching 100, hitting the corners, 3 strikeouts and 2 innings of work, no hits, no walks. Really good from Daniel Palencia coming back onto this team. And then Mark Leiter Jr. ends up getting the loss, giving up a couple hits and a walk. But I don't know. Mark Leiter Jr. gets used every other day, so he's going to have some bad outings. The command wasn't there for him tonight. I guess I'm just curious. We've obviously seen Council trying to get at Adbear some confidence, have him some success in some lower leverage spots. We've seen him pitch in some close games, but not in those save situations. Just what do you think about this bullpen and what are you seeing from some guys, any guys you'd like to see continue maybe getting some high leverage opportunities, guys you're not a fan of? Just what do you think of this bullpen situation right now?
Volatile, good performances from Palencia. If you want the highest outcome guy, it is Palencia. 100 miles per hour slider, 90 miles per hour. Plus he developed a splitter that we did not see tonight, but he's the highest potential guy on this roster. When the year started, I wanted to give Wisniewski a more defined role. I was iffy if they should keep him in a multiple inning type role, but it has worked out because now he needs to start. To the Cubs' credit, they didn't box him into potentially a high leverage Yency Almonte type role. I like Wisniewski because of the sweeper. I think he's going to be a really good high leverage guy given the opportunity because he already has great splits against right-handed batters. And the majority of damage he gives up is against left-handed batters. Now he's in the rotation for now until we get all healthy, or he's going to be in that Ben Brown type role. So that's not a possibility. Yency Almonte has Wisniewski type stuff. He's one of those late inning guys. Up and down with command. Alex Lai needs to get that slider right. He showed a few sliders in the past couple of weeks or appearances that look more north to south. So that's encouraging. Not quite there yet, though, in the book some. I'm still a little hesitant about the current state of the bullpen. I'm also not particularly convinced still, although it's a necessity right now, that Wisniewski's role is optimal. Right now it is because Wicks is out. Hendricks is out. Steele is out. Taillon's just coming back. Right now, Wisniewski needs to eat innings. And that is probably, it is for sure the best situation for him. I'm assuming, though, Corey, once the rotation is back to full stamina and they're going 5, 6, hopefully 7 innings and they're all healthy, I don't think Wisniewski is going to, right now with his current approach, be a long-lasting starting pitcher. Now, we saw him tonight have success. And there were comments about him being unlucky. But rewind the tape, look at the damage that was given up or potential damage. Same problems we've seen. Fastball, too much arm side run, not enough carry. That's just his natural mechanics. Sweeper looked great, got right-handed batters out. Rewind the tape, gave up one deep fly ball that was a home run in 20 out of 30 ballparks. Rewind the tape again. I forgot his name. The Red Sox cleanup hitter almost hit 2 foul home runs. Another one just missed, a left-handed batter just missed another barrel. Same problems against left-handed batters. I need to see more from Hayden to inspire his utility to get left-handed batters out. That means a straighter four-seam or a cutter. He used a cutter more tonight. That was good. Didn't rely on it. So he still needs to grow into that. The four-seam at times has been straighter with less arm side run. Tonight, a little bit more arm side run, maybe because he fatigued or was in the starting role. Wisniewski was good, but if you're looking at him as a starting pitcher right now, it's not quite there yet, I think. And it's being manifested in his ultimate role, where only four innings, five innings. And I think once the rotation is healthy and clicking and confident, I would like to see Hayden shift into a late inning role. I think that's his best, most likely value for this team, assuming, again, everyone's healthy.
Okay. Yeah.
You disagree?
I defer to you on this. I think, obviously, you know, again, it's a tough spot. So there's not going to be always super clear answers here. You know, the Cubs are trying to piece this all together. The Wicks thing, of course, on short notice, like tonight's one of those games where you're just trying to get through it. Like you're not really equipped to have somebody eat a lot of innings. You're hoping to just get through it. And they almost won this game.
Listen, he gave a great effort. Like he really did. Yeah. So it's just forecasting his potential role. Cause you see this when he goes out there and gives you almost four or five innings, everyone starts to think, oh, maybe he's a starting pitcher after all. But the problems are still there that are going to prohibit him from achieving that starting pitching role. And they still were there even tonight, unfortunately, despite the strong effort on short notice.
Yeah. It's tough, you know, with Alzolay not being as effective as you'd like him to be, Merriweather going out, and, you know, some of these guys still trying to find their roles and get their footing under them at the MLB level. You know, a lot of these guys, it's some of their first experience, or they don't have too much experience at the MLB level. So it's not that you take struggles, but you kind of have to expect them. You know, you don't have a bunch of,
Especially now too.
Yeah. Veteran, like lockdown relievers in this bullpen. So it's going to be a struggle, I think. And actually I must have missed this. I said, we weren't sure. I'm reading that the likely plan says likely, so maybe not set in stone, is for Justin Steele to pitch for Iowa on Wednesday. So okay. That's kind of the timeline we assumed, but I didn't know that Craig Counsell, had said likely a specific day. So we'll see if that changes in the coming days, but he's going to make a rehab start soon. So hopefully he comes back. You can readjust some of the roles. Yeah. And that helps your bullpen. And the Cubs will have a decision of, hey, you know, is this guy best suited to help us in the rotation? Or do we really need them to kind of be condensed and be a one or two inning reliever, max velocity, max effort, that type of thing?
Like a Keegan Thompson type role.
You know? Well, and I was just going to say, you think about, like, you know, we talk about guys who have been sort of the unsung heroes to start this season. Yeah, I mean, Keegan Thompson, where great. Would they be without him coming up and being this effective?
Not me.
Yeah, no, definitely not me. Yeah. Cody's always been a believer in the mayor of Chicago. But
we'll Cody see. Believes a little bit too much sometimes.
Yeah, and I do regret to inform everybody that I was looking through the Who You Got picks in the CHGO Cubs Slack channel for tonight. Luke Stuckmeyer took one Michael Tauchman from Palatine. So
okay.
I don't make the judgments, but I think he's gonna get that W.
I think that those scoring systems are rigged. I don't know how I'm in like last place for Who You Got.
Well, you sound like picking, Ryan now, but
I've been picking Nico every day for the past 2 weeks. I'm like in last
I've
place.
I've had Nico a lot. I was actually gonna say I think I need to take Nico more.
No. I had Nico from the moment he played in Arizona up until like four games ago.
Just check the tape. I don't know. But I think that's, you know, pretty much all that we have for you. You know, we're over an hour and 10 now, so a standard Corey and Brendan episode. But I think, you know, ultimately, I feel great about this team. I hope that they can get healthy. I think that, you know, they have done a really nice job to have guys step up and weather this storm. And even if they caught a team like the Astros at a good time when they're not playing their best, they still swept three games against a team that has a really good lineup. They faced Justin Verlander. They kept Yordan Alvarez at bay the entire series. He had one hit in three games. They've done some nice work. But these games like tonight are going to happen. Like you have a lot of people hurt, and we've gone through the list, and I might even forget people, but you know, you've been without Saya for a while now. You've been without Belly for a little bit. You were without Ian Happ for a little while. You've been without Justin Steele since midway through the opening game of the season. You're without Julian Merriweather. I'm sure I'm forgetting people, but Jameson Taillon started the season on the injured list. It just goes on and on. And they're 17-11. Like I said, had they won this game tonight, they would have been in first place. And it's only the end of April. We're at game 28. There is a lot of baseball left to come. So I don't think at all the story of this team has been written in April. We could be having a totally different conversation at the end of May in either direction, an overly positive one when everybody comes back and this team just kicks things into gear and they go on a run to win the NL Central, or they keep staying snake bitten by the injury bug and guys don't come back. I don't know. But 17-11, you were almost in first place tonight. You're keeping pace with your division, which is what you want to do at this point in the year. And hopefully you get these guys back soon. If you can get Saya and Cody Bellinger back into this lineup and providing that thump in the middle of the order, take a little pressure off of guys like Christopher Morel to kind of keep up that hot start, or Michael Bush to keep up that hot start, I feel pretty good about this team as long as they can continue to weather these storms. And the pitching staff is still weathering that because Wicks just hit the injured list and Justin Steele's not back yet. But I think all things considered, you have to feel pretty good about this team. I think you can be upset about games like tonight. You know, you feel like that one got away, or you feel like they've blown some saves.
It's going to happen.
They happen. It's baseball. And they've also stolen some games. They've stolen some games. They've had some nice wins maybe that they took from the jaws of defeat. So I feel pretty good about it. Now you've got a series with the Mets. You stay on the road. You don't have an off day for a while. Let's see what they're made of, Brendan.
If you are into expected records, we've cited this over the years. Everyone's cited this when it favors them. Cubs right now, their expected record is 14-13, and they are 17-11. So yes, we've blown, four saves by Alzolay? Yeah, we blew an 8-0 game. People thought the world was over. I was at that game. I got kicked out because I stayed there too late because I was too sad. Okay. I was at that game. But still, despite all that, their expected record, 14-13, they are playing above their expected record by 3 wins with half the team injured and the majority of guys injured being their major contributors.
Yeah.
It's almost too good to be true.
Absolute major contributors.
It's almost too good to be true. And it could all change. That's how the sport works. We could go into New York. They could get swept. We could be doing this show next Sunday, and guess what? They're at 500 or below 500. God forbid.
No.
But I'm just saying.
We're doing this show next week, and it's going to start with me introducing the first place Chicago Cubs.
Okay.
That's what I'm manifesting.
Okay? All right. Well, you know, sometimes you have to mentally prepare for the worst. That's how I get by. Anyway, that's where I'm at. 14-13. That could be our record, but they're 17-11.
So 4 games with the Mets coming up, and then the Cubs are back home for 3 with the Brewers. 3 of these games at 6:10 Central Time, and then the finale at noon on Thursday. So 4 with the Mets. The Mets are coming into this series at 14-13. They won on Sunday against the St. Louis Cardinals, so that is always nice of them. But now we need them to turn into kind of the classic, everybody, let's make fun of the New York Mets version of the New York Mets. So that is where we are at. As always, tune in to this channel, the CHGO Sports YouTube channel, your podcast feeds. Cody, Luke, Ryan will have post-game, pre-game for you, live post-game show after every game. I'll be in the studio, I think, on Tuesday. I think Luke's going to be out for that one, so I will be filling in for one Luke Stuckmeyer. As always, we appreciate your support of the CHGO Cubs podcast. Appreciate all your super chats tonight, all your comments, all your likes on the YouTube videos, everybody listening on the podcast feeds. We appreciate you. Hopefully the Cubs can get back on their series winning ways as they head out for 4 in New York. Brendan and I will talk to you again soon. And as always, go Cubs.
We all silly like the mayor.